Wow. Feels like forever since we've hung out. I'll explain in a bit, but you can probably hear a little bit of the reasoning. There is a lot to get to today. I'm going to give you the best team coming out of the trade deadline and who we all owe an apology to. And now that the dust has settled, the winners of the day are coming your way. Plus, a really fun interview with Nashville head coach Andrew Burnett. However, it's in how we position the conversation that makes it even more impactful. We're back. It's the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke! Heads up!
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
What are you gonna do?
You guys are sensitive over there.
Hello again. It's been a while, a couple of weeks, or three, or four. I should start by explaining our absence and why today's conversation has been delayed. Producer Bob and I have had a couple of health issues. We won't speak for Bob other than to say he is feeling better. And Super Bowl Sunday gifted me the flu, which evolved into strep throat. I know I'm more than 15 years old, but it happened. And it progressed to a severe case of laryngitis. That was a month ago. No TV, no radio, no podcasting, no fun. But as you can tell, we're on the back end of that. Not totally good yet, but we're making some pretty good progress. Back on TV, and I've got clearance to do the podcast. Through it all, that entire month, Bob and I sat on a conversation that we had just recorded before getting sick with the entertaining coach of the Nashville Predators. Each week on the sidelines, I would tell Bob, this Andrew Burnett interview, it stands up. That went on for days and weeks and then a month. And to my happiness, the Predators' hot streak has outlasted our respective ailments. We earned this episode, and Nashville deserves the story of what happened before the heater to be told. See, the Predators' leading scorer is 19th in the NHL. The club only boasts two players with 20 goals at the time of this recording. The team is anchored by a 33-year-old star blue liner and a goalie who has been rumored at length to be a candidate to save another team at the trade deadline. Under the guidance of a first-year general manager in Barry Trotz and a new coach in Burnett, one that scored the franchise's first goal a lifetime ago, I don't know whether people know that about Andrew Burnett, this roster underwent significant change in the summer, alterations that did not exactly lead to top-end competitiveness in the front half of the campaign. That changed a month ago, when a dismal performance led to management's very public cancellation of a U2 concert at the spectacular new Sphere in Las Vegas. Players said the right thing, coaches and management stood by the move, but it got a lot of attention. And at the time, with Nashville teetering on playoff inclusion, there was a lot of speculation that this was going to take them out of the mix. It was going to derail the season. But something else happened. Everyone raised their performance. What I offer today is the before. I spoke with head coach Andrew Burnett in the days leading up to the controversy, and that led to the subsequent turnaround of the season that has vaulted Nashville to the edge of being a top five team in the league. Nashville knocking on the door of being one of the best five teams in the National Hockey League on the season right now. They have gone from borderline being out of the mix to being a massive, legitimate contender. What you're going to hear in our conversation is a person who is really comfortable in his role. He was aware at the time the team needed to play better, find a way to improve their approach and their production. But Andrew Burnett is also very confident. Nashville was holding on to the second wildcard spot when we spoke. They dropped out, and today they are up only two positions from being out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They are wildcard one. But the narrative the feeling around this team is totally different. They are one of the teams that people are talking about being able to make a long run, having moved well beyond the speculation that Barry Trotz would sell off pieces that included number one goaltender UC Saros. No goals. No goals. What I love about this interview is being able to connect the incredible streak of success that is currently happening with the words spoken before the run. This isn't reactionary. This is teeing up what was going to happen, even though we didn't know what was going to happen at the time. Enjoy a little peek behind the start of one of the most impressive journeys in the NHL this season. Here is Andrew Mrette, at the time, on the verge of going big, while I was days from losing my voice. You're right in the heat of it. Do you look at the standings every day, or is it just osmosis? It's already in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit of osmosis is in there. I think I'm not a big, I never was as a player, you know, standing watching. Seems like I think it's bad luck. Every time I watch the standings too often, it just never seems to work. So I'm kind of more of the day-to-day. And if you win more than you lose, you put yourself in a pretty good position. So, but you're right. It is there for sure. You kind of know without knowing, if that makes sense.
It's hard too right now because it's so frantic in the Western Conference that if you're trying to keep up with every game and every possible outcome, it'll take up 20 hours.
Exactly. And it'll, as it goes on here, you know, for us, you know, I'm kind of looking right now, just like a 5, 7, 8 game segment for us. Cause I think that, you know, we got 3 big home games coming up. Then we go into St. Louis, who we know we're chasing. And then we got, you know, 4 road games into, you know, Vegas, LA, and a back-to-back. So I'm kind of looking at that little bit of segment, at least in my head. But it all changes after your next game. And we've been sitting here for 10 days not playing. So everything all of a sudden you play Saturday and the message and the ideas are going to change, hopefully for the good.
How do you balance the urgency to keeping the pressure off the guys?
Well, I mean, I wish I knew. I wish I had the answer. I think it's keeping it in the day-to-day moment. And you know, I think in our game, you know, being upstairs, managers look 2-3 years ahead, coaches look several weeks ahead. And I think as a player, you're just, it's day-to-day, in my opinion. So I'm trying to stay with what they feel. They don't look too far ahead. You know, I was talking to some of our guys today, you know, even being a player, you see things completely different. They may not, I was just saying, I think it probably goes in one ear out the other when I'm saying this is an important game. These are big games. Because I know as a player, you know, I'm like, yeah, whatever, coach. Yeah, they're all big. There's 82 of them, you know? And I kind of said, you know, if you're dumb enough to sit in my shoes when you're done, you'll understand and you'll get the message a little better that these are big freaking games, you know, and this home ice is really important and all those things. But I think, you know, looking back at my career, I'd be like, yeah, working on it, you know? So
have you ever caught yourself while you've been saying something as a coach going, those guys are going, yeah.
All the time, all the time. Especially you say it and then you're walking back to the coach's office and you're like, yeah, that was one of those moments I probably would have made fun of. I would have made fun of the coach.
Were you that guy?
I think we all are a little bit, yeah. You know. I like to have fun, probably pretty perceptive and felt as a player had a pretty good vibe of what was going on. So, yeah, I'm sure I would have said for sure, yeah. But, I understood. I mean, I watched hockey all the time. I was probably more up to date in the standings and the, you know, what every team has and the point totals and the goals and the power plays. And sometimes I am as a coach, because I think, you know, I felt as a player, he had more time. You know, I was way better at fantasy football. I was way better at fantasy baseball. I had more time to waste doing those things. And I think as a coach, I'm kind of just worried about my 23 guys. And you know, obviously I watch hockey, but I'm watching hockey and I'm thinking more about our team than the game I'm watching. so it never shuts off. But yeah, I had a better idea probably the whole league when I was playing, not coaching.
Interesting. If you've got time to play fantasy baseball, you have all the time in the world. If you've got the ability to keep up to date with that thing. Football is a different story. You can dabble in it.
Yeah. And baseball, when I was playing baseball, was like a little bit of a, especially the spring was a little bit of a release. Kept my mind, same with fantasy football. Just, it kept my mind off of hockey. Especially kind of crunch time and playoff time for me to sit and watch a baseball game during the playoffs at a night before a game or something was peaceful and relaxing and enjoyable. And my mind worked the counts and worked, the shifts and why are they doing that? Why are they doing that? So I think that for me was a great outlet, got me thinking, it got me away from the game. Cause I think sometimes the game consumes me too much as a player. And baseball was a great getaway for me. So I stayed, I love it. I follow it still fairly intently, but not like I used to. Like I was, kind of a little bit nerdy about it.
What position did you focus on with the first pick?
Well, in baseball?
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually I think you're kind of a nerd and you try to find the position that maybe, there's not a lot of good hitters. So, obviously if you had the first pick and it was a year that, you picked the best hitter, but maybe it might zone in on a shortstop when shortstops weren't hitting or third base, if there wasn't a lot of them, and figuring you can get the DHs and the first bases later, that kind of thing. But usually every draft is a little bit of strategy of what, where you saw the little bit of the outlier and a little bit of hole where you could take advantage of the system.
Is that why you're a coach? Because you had that DNA in you?
I think maybe that one would be more, kind of always thought of myself more as a, a builder. I think even when I retired and kind of went upstairs, I thought I'd follow the path of, maybe being a manager or, at some level. I don't know if it was the NHL, but kind of worked through the ranks there, was player personnel, did some assistant GM, and kind of was, I thought that's kind of where I'd go because I really enjoyed that stuff. I enjoyed I really got into the drafts even as a kid and, all those kind of things. And again, in the baseball and the football. So I really thought I had a good pulse on building. So kind of thought that's what I would do. I think the coaching part, I'm not sure where that came from, but it...
By accident? Like how did it come?
I think it came, I was upstairs and, I kind of tell, different stories, but, you're in Rimouski or something or you're overseas and you're, a million miles from the ice of the team you're trying to build, you're scouting, you're trying to put things together and you kind of miss a little bit of the grind, as a player, I think I played as long as I had and when you're retiring, it's really, really hard and you're not sure what you want to do. I knew I wanted to do something in hockey, but you're not sure. And you're not sure where do you find that feeling, And I think you thought you'd be in the game and you're kind of, like I said, driving the Rimouski to Quebec, to fly out of Quebec City to fly out, to go somewhere else. And you're like, miss the camaraderie and you find, you find yourself, it was kind of like a light went on and I said, maybe that's what I've been searching for. I think we search when we retire, we're searching for that feeling. And not that I really enjoyed what I was doing. I loved the scouting. I loved the building. I loved the development. I just felt I was detached and kind of wanted to be part of something. I missed the guys. I missed the locker room. I missed the sounds, the smells. I missed, I guess, having a hand in helping right now, not two or three years down. Like your reward, when you're managing is usually down the line, at least it may be, right? And we're coaching, it's right there. It's you feel it's instant kind of gratification and it's instant disappointment, but it's kind of what you know, right? So I think and I was 40, I think five or six at the time. And I said, I think I gotta give it one more chance and see if that's coaching is what I'd like. Cause I I know I'm missing something. What is it? And he was able to, I guess, get out of retirement, mature a little bit, or see a little more clearly out of the fog. And so I got an opportunity with Joel, and the rest is history. I loved it. As soon as I went back on the ice, as soon as I was able to work with players, and like I said, the instant gratification and disappointment was something that obviously I love. So it's kind of how it, making a short story long here, but that's kind of how it, you know, materialized.
Well, you assumed the role in Florida, and then you were associate in Jersey, and now you've got your team in Nashville. Describe the intensity of the part of the season right now where you're fighting for that wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we play for, you know, kind of the, this is the time of year that we, as players, as this is, it's go time. We're in one, and this is why we play. So it's intense, but I think that's what makes it so much more fun. The intensity to me is, you don't want to say the drug, but is the thing that gets you go, is brings you the adrenaline of why we do this.
Is it fun or is it overwhelming?
I think it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think it can become overwhelming. Absolutely. Ask me in a week. We're just coming off break.
Have you overachieved though this year with the organization? Not many franchises will make a change of general manager. I know that there were special circumstances there with David walking away. You move in. Not too many teams will make major changes at both positions and still be in the mix of it.
Yeah, I don't think we've overachieved. I think we've kind of achieved. I mean, I think the team, you know, last year was plus 10, I think. 10 games over 500 knocked on the door. So you can almost say we're probably underachieving a little bit. Maybe not the same pace as they were last year. Well, maybe at this year they were, but they had that great run. So yeah. I think if you would ask me the start of the year, I'd be extremely happy to be where we're at. So I don't know if that's, maybe it is a little bit overachieving or just achieving. It didn't really answer.
Where do you got to get better then to close it out?
Well, I think we're going to have to get some secondary scoring. You know, we've relied heavily on our top line and probably burdened them a little bit. And you know, some of our young kids, some of that secondary group is just, not that they're not creating, we're just having trouble finishing, you know, a lot of nights, and probably a little inconsistent on special teams. You know, I think on both sides, the power play kind of got cold. So that's going to have to, you know, I think that's partly by really relying on one group of guys that are producing. So it's dried out a little bit, and the PK has been kind of start off poorly, and it's kind of been up and down, you know, through the stretch. So for us, that scoring doesn't come that easy. You know, we have to be really tight in those two areas.
How much are you and Barry talking about potential deadline acquisitions?
I think we're constantly communicating. You know, I think the relationship we have, I think we see things very similarly. We're always talking. We're kind of, again, that segment we talked about a little earlier, these next eight games are kind of going to let us know where we're at a little bit and let Barry know where we're at. And fortunately, we're going to have some tough decisions to make. But we're on the same page. And sometimes I'm like, I don't really want to hear that. You know,
are you able to laugh that off with him? Like, yeah, or do you, yeah, can, or as a, when he's your boss, you like gotta go keep your mouth.
No, I think Barry, he's got a good sense of humor. I think we've had history together. And I think, yeah, I can laugh. He'll laugh it off too. You know, he'll say, hey, sorry, but, and I'm understanding. I think that a little bit of the lucky part for me is I was upstairs, you know, and I did a lot of the things that went on upstairs, and I understand how that works. I think for me, it's a great asset that I did spend time, because I think organizationally you have a better, clearer understanding of why they're doing some things and why, you know, the youth or the waivers, all those different little things that as a coach, I don't think if you were not upstairs, you wouldn't understand. So I understand the business up there and I understand how it works. So I think that's helped me understand or comprehend what Barry's saying and why, without, you know, I've been around a lot of other coaches that, you know, it gets really upsetting. It gets a little triggering. where I get it, because unfortunately I had to do some of those things.
How's Barry the same or different as your coach as he is your general manager?
I think Barry, I mean, I had Barry when I was 19 or 20 and he was a young coach, you know, mm-hmm. So going back 31 years ago, I guess. He was a little bit more volatile as a coach, as he is a manager. I think, you know, years of doing what he's done and the success he's had, I don't say mellow him, because he does. I can see that little twinkle in his eye, and I know that's, you know, probably get out of the way, you know.
Not a good day to catch up with him. Oh, okay, exactly. We'll do this later. Yeah.
His eye gives a little bit of a twinkle, and I'm like, oh, I got to get out of here. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that one. But it doesn't happen quite as frequently as it used to happen when we were younger. But the great thing about him is he's been in the trenches his whole career. So he understands a little bit of the cadence of the coaching, you know, after games or certain times. There's not those blowouts. He gets his point across, but it's without the emotion in it. I think after games, a lot of times there's high emotion on both sides. So he understands that. So I think for a coach, that's, you know, is really a real blessing. I'm grateful that he's had that experience, because he understands that part of it. But again, like I said, I stay away usually when there's a twinkle.
What's your coaching style? How would you describe it?
Oh boy. Good question. Never really thought about it. I think my coaching style is pretty simple, you know, really simple. A couple things. I want to have the puck. And when I don't have it, I want to get it back as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I want to have fun. And there's all kinds that goes into that. You know, there's all kinds of things that go into that. You know, I think you follow sort of your core values, where you're authentic, in that, you know, certain things, like I believe in, I believe in compassion. You know, I believe in communication. I think especially today's player, it's a, and that took that, I mean, that I'm still not great at, but that was such a hard skill to learn. And when I first coached in Minnesota, you know, understanding today's player, you know, I really, in the communication part, I had a hard time listening. You know, it was hard to listen and kind of validate, because I think, you know, maybe I was in the old school of the, you know, the coach that just laid it down and why do that. And it's just different now. Now it's a little bit more of a partnership, instead of a dictatorship, I guess you can say. So I think I've had to learn that, and I think I've gotten better at that. But that was a tough one, you know, because I would say, well, why, you know, either they have their own opinions. What do you mean you have an opinion? No, I want you to do this, you know? So I think I learned. So I think that communication, and that's, for me, that's the listening part for me was the hard one. Still is. I mean, I still catch myself not listening. And I'm like, you got to listen. So I think, you know, those are, you know, and I think competition obviously is one of the big values. Like, I love to compete, and I try to instill that with our group and in different areas, and always a little bit of a competition, always, you know, we're, you know, having fun, which is another one, the joy enjoy, I guess, in my values is not, everybody gets confused that happy is just the byproduct of doing something you love and enjoying the process, enjoying, you know, it's going to be a grind. And it's easy to say, but I think if you can have that kind of mentality going in, that that's where the fun is. The fun's not just like the result, the fun is the process. And I try to have those little bit of value. So I don't know if I answered your question, what my style was. I try to stay true to myself, but I think I try to encompass those I think in my core values or ideas, and bring it into a connection. You know, I think being connected, on the ice, off the ice, with your group, and it follows all those values that kind of listed. So that's kind of my approach and my style. But
are you a player's? Would you put yourself as a player's coach? Because there's part of what you said would say that you're more hardliner too.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a hardliner. I think I'm fair. I think there's expectations, but I want to do it collaboratively. Like, we're together in this. I'm going to push you. You're not always going to like what I have to say. I'm not always going to like to have your say, but it's going to be open. It's going to be honest, and we're going to have fun doing this. And I'll try to make as fun as possible or as enjoyable as possible. And, you know, I always, there's no better, you know, game in the world to be able to be a part of and play. And I just try to keep that with that being authentic about how I treat people. So I would say more of a player's coach, but I think there's, it falls in different areas and such a cliche word, player coach, I think, but.
I don't think people realize the fun factor and how it can influence a team. And people just assume you're a professional athlete. You're having the time of your life, but it takes a certain group to really bring out some enjoyment. Some teams don't have fun at all.
No, I know. And I've been on those teams. Yeah. And I've been on, and somebody said, well, it's only the good teams that they have fun. I said, no, I, some of the teams that weren't very good are awful teams that I had a lot of fun and the group had a lot. We weren't very good, but we had fun and we enjoyed each other and we were connected. And I still see those guys later in my life and career. And I can't wait to see them. I mean, that's sort of what I feel like. Obviously the winning's great, but it's the kind of the journey and the people you meet and the connections you have in the game. To me, this is what I hold dearest.
Does Juice UC Saros say more than no goals that we see in the commercial all the time?
Not really. I think you get him going. I kind of get him going on soccer a little bit. So he soccer. Yeah. So we,
who's
we,
your team?
Well, it varies. Whoever's kind of winning. No, I think I enjoy. Yeah. I mean, probably like about Tottenham, you know, I think, probably just like for a longer time. You know, I like Pep. So you get Barcelona into Bayern, into Man City. I always follow his teams. Liverpool, you know, with the Klopper there, I kind of get a kick out of him and read up.
He's on the best.
Yeah, I love it. So I they're paid probably no team. It just more the game. You know, I think the game is really interesting and kind of, it's something even tactically that, you know, I've read up a lot on and you know, follow. It's kind of funny. I was watching, I think it was Brighton and I don't know, it was Nottingham or Crystal Palace. It was a game like maybe 2 weeks on a Saturday. And, you know, I'm kind of losing my hearing a little bit. So like the game was on and my wife hates when I watch sports and that's all I really watch. And she yells at me to turn it down. So I turn it down. You know, I just started watching, you know, kind of watching the game and, to see the, you know, and these aren't even top end teams, to see the tactics and the triangle. And it was almost like Ted Lasso when he's watching. I don't know if you watch Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
When he's the Bulls, the triangles. It's almost like it was a weird moment. And it's kind of similar to when you watch hockey sometimes when, you know, you'd see all these just different movements and space creating. And just really for that 5 minutes, I was just tantalized by the screen. I was just couldn't keep my eyes off. And I said, it was a Ted Lasso moment, I guess, but it's just amazing how the parallels together, right? Like all sports, but you know, sometimes I get that with basketball too, watching basketball and seeing how they clear out space and how they do these, you know, the motion, the movement. And I'm like, oh, I get a pen out and I write, that's not a bad idea for the power play but it was amazing. I just had it off. A lot of times you get, you know, even in, well, I find myself in soccer because, you know, when I have it on, I'm kind of listening more to the announcers. I'm watching the ball. But when the volume was off and I was just watching the kind of dazing out, watching the movement.
The whole field, right?
The whole field, exactly. Yeah. I think I get when the announcer's on, I'm kind of following the ball, you know. And then when it was off for that, you know, amount of time, I was following all the movements, and which I try to anyways, but it just kind of was kind of amazing to see, actually. So I think that's, you know, but with Juice, it's fun to, you know, getting back to Juice, it's fun to get them. And I think that was, you know, as a player to connect with the Europeans and different, you know, groups, soccer was a real bond. And so I tried to, because I wanted to learn about them. I was able as a player to really follow, you know, the soccer, you know, Paul Stastny, we used to watch all the time together. And that kind of got me into it a little bit. And, you know, Total Football. And I think Total Football kind of responds a little bit to hockey, you know, how Johan Cruyff made everybody play every position. I think as we go on here, I think you're seeing that with defensemen, right? Defensemen skate just as good as any forward in the league right now. And my generation, I couldn't skate backwards, you know, but you're seeing all these and the D-man couldn't handle a puck or skate forwards, but now they're just, you know, you get the Hughes brothers and the game's kind of evolving that way, I feel. Which I find is really interesting. And that's kind of why, you know, started reading a lot about it. But yeah, anyways.
Have you adopted some of that thinking into your approach beyond just the scribbling, maybe power play moving over?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you, there's a little bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit in you can say, you know,
do you tell Barry that you got that from football, or do you just say, I got this idea?
Well, I'm going to probably divulge where I got it from. I'm freaking nuts.
Dolphin matter, double guy. He's like, what?
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's certain things tactically for sure. You know, I think when you see, you know, Klopp's teams play and the gang of pressing and how they, it almost reminds me a little bit of Carolina, you know, a little bit how they play, that they're up in your feet. They're, you know, you can almost see a little bit of total football there too, you know, in a way, but reminds me, you know, Carolina reminds me a lot of the, you know, the gang of pressing where they're in your face, like the defenseman's all the way down to the, sometimes into the, you know, goal line where they're pressing and they're just keeping you in. You know? So I think you see some tactics there. You need the personnel to do it. And that's where I think like where the evolution of our game and how good defensemen skate and how long they are and how they can handle pucks. They can play different positions, you know? I remember talking with Rick Wilson. This is going back 10, 12 years ago. I don't know if you know Rick. Rick was a long time. Yeah. I coached with him in Minnesota, and we would just sit there and he had that, where's the game going? And this is 13 years ago. And we had Spurgeon and Brodine and Dumba and Scandella. And we had all these mobile, Ryan Suter, mobile D, you know, and we'd kind of sit around and have a coffee or a beer and talk about, like, you know, I think it's going to, you know, the defenseman position might kind of be a hybrid position. You know, you might see a, you know, a 1-3-1 or a 2-3 or, you know, and we're kind of seeing a little bit of that. But it was funny, we went back that long ago, and obviously Rick, he's a real sharp hockey mind, but just that conversation and to see it kind of evolve, like we were just kind of spalling and wasting time or something.
And you're right on the money.
And he was right. I mean, you know, we're not there quite yet, I don't think, but we're getting there, which is really, really interesting.
How has Nashville changed from when you were there as a player scoring the first goal to now coming back as a coach?
Well, you've been here. It's blown up, you know, it's never ending growth everywhere. I mean, you see cranes all over the place. So times I missed a little bit of the small town feel, like when I was here 25 years ago and there's a little strip and there's not as much traffic. But I think for the city, it's great. It's very, you know, there's everything here. It's popping. And I think what, for me, how the game's grown here, you know, when we first got here where they were, you know, they all had headsets and they're explaining offside and what penalties are, and there's no youth hockey. There was none of that. Now you see it, you know, you see these youth hockey teams are in, you know, the Carnival Quebec tournament. When my nephew's playing, even 10 years ago, they're in Toronto. So it's grown. And I think every credit to David, credit to the Predators, and credit to all the players that wore the jersey, I think we really promoted the game. So it's a lot different. You know, they understand the game a lot better. There's a lot more, I guess, hockey talk in the city. It's kind of neat how it's transformed in 25 years and it's turned into a, you know, there's, I don't know how many rinks now. There's no rinks, I think, when I was here, that it's, you know, pretty good, cool to see it evolve as it has.
How many more visitors do you have popping in to see you guys or say, hey, I'm coming to town, than maybe some other stops?
Yeah. They didn't want to come to Minneapolis or Minnesota that often. I don't, in the winter, I'm not sure why. Yeah, everybody wants to come here. Yeah.
It's so much fun. So do you have a point total that you have to achieve? You don't have to tell me. You probably wouldn't anyway. But do you have that number where we got to get to that?
Yeah.
And do you have to be really ahead of pace, or is it a good, comfortable pace?
I think it's got to be a comfortable pace, a little bit of the pace we're on about a month ago. I think you'd feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to get back to that pace. And I think for our group, like we've left so many points on the table, you know, so we can't leave anymore. You know, there's games, you know, just even overtime losses. Like we've had so many one goal kind of games, or we're up 3-2 late and don't get anything out of it, or 2-0, get nothing out of it, or down, storm all the way back, tie it and give up a late goal, you know. Where we just little bit of maturity at different times, especially that first 2015-16 games where we left stuff I thought the last month a little bit, and then we had two really good months in between. So you got to find a way to get a point, you know, and that's going to be crucial for our group.
Funny, you run through those games and I know exactly which games you're talking about. It's like, wow. And those stick with you. They're painful. This is awesome. I always find it hard to actually get talking about the specifics of the game with you because we get chirping about everything else. So I really appreciate it, Bruno.
Hey, no problem. Love being on. You do great work.
Thanks, buddy. We'll see you in Vegas.
Okay. Sounds good.
Shouldn't admit this, at least on something that is official, carrying the shield of the National Hockey League, but Andrew Burnett is one of the top five guests we've ever had on this podcast. He's been a two-time guest, but I just love how, he's fun, he's great, but he's also not afraid to embrace things like the soccer influence, and he doesn't keep that hidden. He talks about it publicly. And it offers so many different avenues to go around. At least as an interviewer, he is an absolute treat. You're not pulling things out. You're exploring conversations with Andrew Burnett. Big soccer fan. So am I. Love my Bournemouth Cherries of the English Premiership, who actually pulled off one of the great comebacks in EPL history the other day, rallying from three goals down to win a game. 4-3, a massive second half. It was so much fun to watch, at least from a supporter of the winning team. It reminded me of what happened between Florida and Dallas in the National Hockey League. Now, comebacks of multi-goals, a little more common in hockey, but still, Dallas was up 3-0 on the Florida Panthers, a potential Stanley Cup final preview. And it was the Florida Panthers that rallied back and won that game in what I refer to going into it as the Buddy Bowl, because the two head coaches are great friends going back to junior hockey days in Pete DeBoer and Paul Maurice. Neither guy has won a Stanley Cup behind the bench. This could be the year for one of them, and it was Paul Maurice who was on the winning side of things in the most recent clash. And I think Florida's for real. Ironically, this team that was coached by Andrew Burnett a couple of years ago is having similar success as under Bruno, but has undergone a massive transformation to be a more competitive team in the spring. This isn't even the same team that made the Stanley Cup final last year. This team is much, much more prepared for a deep run. They've changed it. The special teams are good. They're bigger. They're hard to play against. Way more structured. Goaltending is outstanding, and they have elite goal scorers. The ads were good this year. They boosted their roster, and the Panthers are the best team in the National Hockey League right now. Vegas pulled off the highest profile moves at the trade deadline. Tomas Hertl and Noah Hanifin both went to the Stanley Cup champions. Hertl, in the second year of an 8-year deal with San Jose, was traded, and he hopes to return from a procedure on his right knee before the start of these playoffs. He is rejuvenated. One of his best lines was, "I was the tallest guy in San Jose. Now I'm looking up to everybody in Vegas." Noah Hanifin is partnered with Alex Pietrangelo for an alpha pairing on the Golden Knights right now. Vegas is much healthier after adding a player to the lineup 5 games in a row, including Jack Eichel, who is back. Jonathan Marchessault is closing in on the team goal-scoring record, and the Golden Knights just look more like the Stanley Cup champions that hoisted the Stanley Cup last spring than they have in a long time this year, since they bolted from the gate and were so effective at the start of the season. They look very good. Can they catch Edmonton for a home ice position? That will be the goal coming down the stretch. I believe, based on the gap between Nikita Kucherov, this will be slightly controversial, but I do believe the gap between Nikita Kucherov and the second highest point producer on the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, Kucherov should win the Hart Trophy for MVP. I've never bought into the whole most valuable player to his team angle. In fact, I would just shove it to the side. I would pile on. I would kick it out the door. It bugs me that somebody would be more valuable to their team instead of just being the best player in the league. It bothers me that that's even part of the language. It gets trotted out every year, and I shoot it down every year. But this time around, it's so obvious in Tampa, and for this 1 year, I'm converted to that thinking. Nikita Kucherov has 40 more points than the next highest scorer on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who's Brayden Point? Who's a pretty good hockey player? 40 more points, and he's challenging for the Art Ross Trophy. He gets my vote. Dylan Larkin should also be in the mix, at least when you take into account what's happened to Detroit since the captain's been out. The Red Wings stumble and free fall has opened up to the likes of Buffalo and the Islanders to qualify for the Stanley Cup playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Now, nothing against the Red Wings. I would love to see them back in, but there's a part of me that's kind of cheering for the New York Islanders simply for the possibility, and it's not a guarantee, but there is a chance of a Rangers-Islanders first round. And we should all gather together. If you want to do it individually, you can, if you can't make our meeting, but we should all gather together next week at 8 o'clock on Wednesday and offer an apology to the Buffalo Sabres. They were left buried under 8 feet of snow. No chance. One of the disappointing teams. At the start of the year, we expected Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit to all challenge. Only Detroit got into that mix. Well, Buffalo's there. They're within striking distance. Maybe too little, too late. Will it be more heartbreak coming up a point shy like they did last year? But they're in this thing, and it proves that you shouldn't just shove somebody to the top of the shelf in the back corner of the storage room. Now, I'm guilty of it. I owe them an apology. The Buffalo Sabres are making noise right now in the Eastern Conference. Also want to tell you, before we go here, NHL Productions and NHL Backstory has released a brand new podcast, and it's titled Tales from the Deadline, which takes listeners behind the scenes and into the frenzy of one of the most significant and anticipated days on the NHL calendar. It has grown to epic proportions where everybody follows the National Hockey League in the lead up to the NHL trade deadline. The weeks, the days, and the hours going up to that trade deadline. It has grown from in and around 1980. That gets a lot of the credit for inspiring the National Hockey League trade deadline. And now it's become the leader of all the major sports of this day. And other sports are starting to follow what the National Hockey League has done with its trade deadline. So NHL Backstory, Tales from the Deadline, will offer listeners an opportunity here from those most intimately involved in trade deadline operations, like current general managers Ken Holland with Edmonton, Stanley Cup champion with Detroit, Billy Guerin runs the Minnesota Wild, Tampa Bay's Julian Breezeball has swung multiple deals as part of the back-to-back championships with the Bolts, and from a couple of decades ago, Lou Nanny. Mike Smith was a general manager with Winnipeg. That's where I got to know Mike. And Neil Smith won a Stanley Cup and pulled off all kinds of deals to propel the New York Rangers in 1994 to the Stanley Cup championship. The audience is also going to hear firsthand accounts from former players. Brent Ashton, who was traded, 12 different teams played for in the National Hockey League, and Flyers executive Jay Snyder. Players like Mike Sillinger, who appeared in more than 1,000 games and a dozen different teams, he's going to stop by. Sillinger's wife, Carla, and son, Cole, who now plays for Columbus, offer their perspective from the family side. And then you've got guys like Mike Camilleri and Matt Duchene being notified mid-game of their trades at the deadline. How about the infamous Eric Lindros trade involving the Quebec Nordiques? We'll dive into that a little bit. So it's NHL Backstory, an NHL Studios podcast that offers you a wonderful look at Tales from the Deadline. It's available wherever you get your podcast. I got a sneak preview of it, one of the benefits of working with the National Hockey League, and it's awesome. The different names that you're going to hear. Ray Bourque is in it. Barclay Goodrow, Blake Coleman, part of that Tampa Bay Lightning Championship in 2020. So massive names. And then you've got some of the names that are complimentary pieces that push teams over the top. Enjoy it. I can't wait to get your reaction. And Bob and I would like to say we're open for your best wishes, your well wishes, your get better soon, get back to 100% soon. Send us a note on Twitter, Instagram, wherever you want to get in contact with us. We'd appreciate it because it's been a long grind. It's been a battle, man. And Bob and I, we're back, and we're hoping to be 100% very soon. Thanks to Andrew Burnett. Thanks to you for sticking with us and reaching out and checking in on us. And we can't wait to get back to a great weekly visit with you as we move our way towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.